Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is episode 144 of the Distraction Pieces podcast, and I'm joined by James Buckley. I recorded this whilst I was in LA, and it was absolutely lovely. It's kind of ironic that the two guests I managed to get while I was in LA were both British. Oh, I should mention, also whilst I was out there, I did two other people's podcasts that were really, really good. I went on Doug Loves Movies, which is one of my favourite podcasts anyway. I listen to that constantly, so I was delighted to be asked on that. I landed on the Sunday. I'm knocking about on the Monday, and at 4 p.m. I get a message off Doug Benson saying, can you come on Doug Loves Movies at 8:45 tonight, live in front of an audience? I was like, yeah, okay. So we did that, and that was great. And I also went on Get Up On This, which was a fantastic podcast where you kind of, you pick two things to recommend people that have maybe been overlooked. The host picks two things and the co-host picks one thing. Really good podcast. We talk about a lot of good hip-hop, a lot of good movies and comedy, some good, yeah, just good stuff. So I recommend both of them. They're both on iTunes and that, and they're free. So check that out. But also, I'd need to plug speechdevelopmentrecords.com, which is always a sponsor of the podcast. We've got a new record coming out, the POS album. It's really good and you're going to love it. So I recommend you go and buy that. But also, I've got tons of merch on there. I'm about to launch my spring summer range of merch and it's going to blow your mind. It's the merch I've never been this excited about new merch, because I'm putting out stuff that I've never seen anyone release before, any musician or podcaster release. So it's probably not going to be of interest to anyone at all, but I'm super excited about it. So excited. I've contacted an abandoned, a listed location in London to try and blag it for a photo shoot. I never do actual photo shoots for the new merch, or not often. So yeah, I'm kind of excited about it. You're going to crack up when you see it, or just go, Pip, you're an idiot. Why would anyone want your face on that? Vague, right? Oh, mate, it's going to be good. Yeah, speechdevelopmentrecords.com. Go and check out all that stuff. There's lovely stuff. It's lovely. It's lovely. There's lovely stuff. James Buckley is on this week's podcast. We talk a little bit about Stu Whiffin. Stu Whiffin introduced us, and Stu Whiffin has a new podcast out with Chris Glasson. It's called Hardcore Listing. It launched on Monday. I was the first guest, and I picked... It's a list show, and you have to pick a topic to give your top five of. And I picked my top five US TV dramas. Now, I nerded out and got specific, because I was like, I can't just pick my top five TV shows, because you can't compare The Office to The Wire. They're completely different creatures. So, yeah, I picked my top five US TV shows, and I think you'll enjoy our chat and rambling about it all. But yeah, head over to iTunes and Acast and grab that Hardcore Listing, part of the Distraction Pieces Network. Join in Tuesday Night Jaw, the award-winning Say Why to Drugs, and Stop and Search. So the network is getting bigger. We have a new family member, and I would love it if you could all go immediately and download that and embrace it. Good stuff to come from them, boys. I'm super excited and proud of them for this podcast, because annoyingly it's really good, and they're really good hosts, and they're really amusing and entertaining to listen to. You'll know it kills me to say that, because you've heard on the Drunk Cast how much I hate the pair of them. There should be a Drunk Cast maybe next week, maybe the week after. Yeah, some more of that to come. But yes, this week's guest, let's get on with it, is James Buckley. Right, I'm out here in LA, and I thought I'd see what crazy, unique to this area people I could get. And I'm here with James Buckley, who normally lives 10 minutes up the road from me.
Yeah.
In Essex.
Yeah, I live just down the 1306, I think.
Yeah.
About 20 minutes away from you. But we had to come to LA to do this podcast.
That's what's perfect, and that's what I like about it, is I think our mutual friend Stuart Whiffin, who's been on the podcast being a drunk idiot, he said to me, oh, Buckley's in LA, like, you might be able to have a chat when you're out there. And we arranged it and set it up, And it wasn't until we'd said, yeah, we'll do it, that it hit me as like, we've tried a few times in the UK and not managed or not got around to it. So what is it about LA?
But we've also spoken a lot, like on the phone, and they've texted each other a lot. And
I remember we got, there was a walkie-talkie app that came out. And we were in a little group on that. Me, you, a Whiffin and Mark Watts. And we were just doing walkie-talkie things to each
Voxer.
Other. Voxer, that's it. That was the only time I ever used it. It was just for our little group message. So we've got a weird relationship in that we've never actually met properly.
It's bizarre that we're in the same room. It's like as if, I don't know, we were online dating for a while.
Yeah.
And now we've finally met up. Do I live up to...
You do. So, I mean, we're early...
handsome as the picture that I said.
We're early on the date. It's also speaks to the vapidness of LA, in that when you're out here, as I am and you are, you're kind of... You're waiting to get meetings, you're being messed about. So when someone says... Do you want to meet up? You're like, yeah, let's let's meet up.
It is intense.
I'm going crazy.
Yeah, there's literally only reason why I'm out here, and that is for work reasons.
Yeah.
And so what happens is, I don't know anyone out here. I've got one famous friend.
Excellent.
Who's Tom Felton.
Yeah.
Who's Draco from Harry Potter. He's in Vancouver filming something. I can usually rely on him to not have any work.
Yeah.
But he's busy filming something, and so whenever someone says, would you like to meet up and have an actual conversation that isn't about work, or I go, yes, please, because I'm going mad.
But how are you finding the kind of... I did Doug Loves Movies podcast last night at Nerdmelt, and they said, like, what are you in town for? And I felt like a cunt, because I was like, oh, I'm here for meetings and stuff.
Yeah.
And they kind of mocked a bit, but their thing was... You always get a free water, so just enjoy the free water. But how do you find, I guess what I'm asking is how do you find the meetings and that world? Because it's such a strange world that it is about going and sitting down and having a chat with people. And that's not a lot of time to get a read of someone.
Yeah, but I think I find them quite fun. I love meeting people out here, and I do love the people out here.
Yeah.
Like I love being here.
It's great.
There's something about it that I like.
In the UK as well, I've had exactly the same. I've really enjoyed all these meetings that you'll hear, they're soulless and it's so superficial. I've just chatted with people.
Yeah.
A lot of them haven't turned into anything. So maybe it's the fact I don't mind that they don't turn into anything. It's nice to have that chatter moment.
I guess so, possibly.
With an awareness that down the lines something might happen.
I think what you'll find, and what will be... It's the same situation as me. Is you go into these meetings, especially if they're general meetings.
Yeah.
So they're not a meeting about anything.
That's all I'm lined up for.
They're a meeting when you come into town and you say, I'm an actor.
Yeah.
And I'll be good at this.
Hello.
And I'd like to get to know you and keep me in mind and anything that comes up in the future. And what you will find is that you'll go into these meetings and you'll start talking and they'll sit up a little bit.
Yeah.
Because what they're used to is some blonde American guy, muscle man walking in.
Yeah.
I don't know, like a Zac Efron or something saying, hey, I'm in town, I'm an actor, and I'm ready to make some films.
Yeah.
And there'll be loads of them.
Yeah.
And it's lovely.
Yeah.
I like looking at them.
It's
yeah.
It's adorable.
But when you come in and you're a little weird bloke from England.
Yeah.
And you talk about how difficult it was to understand how to fill your car up with petrol.
Yeah.
They love it.
Yeah.
And they suddenly, you instantly, you're lodged in their heads and you make an impression straight away. There's something that we have... that Britishness about us where we don't walk into a room saying, I'm the best at everything.
Yeah.
Even if you are the best at everything.
Yeah.
You just go, hello. Is there anything I can do for you?
Yeah.
That sort of attitude.
I completely get that.
And it's different to what they get every day.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. And I think anything I like that is key. That the reason I came out to do general meetings... Which, again, on paper, it seems kind of pointless. Because it is. It's like, it's not for a specific role.
Yeah, no, it's not.
The thing I realised. The three acting gigs I've had so far all came after I'd had a general meeting. Because then, if they call me in to cast for something, it's because they know a bit of me.
Yeah.
And they want me for it. Rather than they've got a list of 30 to 40-year-old white males that they're going to get all of them in. It's like, well,
But there's so much scope there, because not even just that, specifically that, those people will have other friends in the industry, and something will come up and they'll be discussing at one of their posh lunches or something one afternoon. They'll go, oh, actually, I spoke to a guy from Britain a couple of weeks ago. He'd be quite good for that.
Yeah, yeah.
And they'll go, oh, I'll consider that. So they're very, very important. I mean, off the back of General Meetings for me, at the moment, I'm in the middle of getting a film made that I've written.
Amazing.
I'm working closely with a producer now for a show idea that I've got. So that's, I'm mainly out here for stuff that I've created myself.
Yeah.
And then if there's any acting work that comes up that I feel that I might be good at, I go along and I'll have a meeting about that. But on the acting side out here, I feel like I need a very specific part.
Yeah. Sure.
I'm not an everyman.
It makes sense, because it's such a polished American world out here.
Yeah.
So it is. It's a specific thing that if you fit, it's ideal and it's perfect. But if not, then you can't be going up for every role because you're not the right fit for that.
But it doesn't surprise me that any sort of acting work you've got come from General Meetings, because you've got your look.
Yeah.
It's much more striking than me.
The thing I had today, and one of the first things I said, I've got the advantage of, again, if you're seeing 20 actors a day, I'm a rapper from Essex. So they've gone on YouTube and watched some music videos, and that's a bit different. They've not just watched a showreel and here's clips. They've gone, oh, this is it's fun.
Also, you stuttering your way into a room as well. It's unusual.
Yeah.
And it's sort of exotic.
And the fact I'm quite comfortable with it. I'm like,
I've got to say, it's a little bit annoying, to be honest. Because I'm properly trying to be an actor. You're just throwing your hat in the ring.
Stumbling about going, all right, guys.
I know. And people are going, oh, isn't it brilliant? Oh, he's a spoken word poet. He's a rap. But do you know he's got a stutter? Right? And everyone loves you for that. Right? Look at me. Look at the success I've got.
You work.
But I can't act.
No, I mean, you're fully functional.
Yeah, but I can't act at all. But I've managed to do stuff. But people don't say it's endearing. They just go, oh, look at that tit trying to make a living out of acting.
Did you know he can't act?
No, that's what people should be saying. Look at him. And he's not even funny. And he's managed to make a career in comedy.
it is an exciting thing, though, that you're coming at it from a... And I think it's the key at the moment, and it's something that's exciting to me about film and TV, is that you're coming at it as a writer and as a performer.
Yeah.
And we've seen with... I bang on about them all the time, but Michaela Cole with Chewing Gum and a Childish Gambino with Atlanta and the OA and Fleabag and all these different things, where there seems to be that comfort at the moment in putting some faith in someone to go, look, I've got this idea. I'm not just one of 100 actors here trying to get that acting role. I've got the whole show. I've got this whole thing.
Yeah, I think it helps having that in your arsenal to go along to meetings and say, I've actually got these funny ideas I've been sitting on for a while. And then, that having that meeting, they'll then say, well, can you write it down? I've written it now, but the TV show that we're working on at the moment, and I've got this really famous producer. I'd love to tell you who it is because it will sort of validate me a little bit, but I'm just not allowed to.
That's fine.
Because people try and sue you out here a lot.
Yeah. Well, completely. It's the weirdest thing in general on podcasts at the end. I'll say, oh, what are you up to at the moment? And with actors, it's the one that is they all have to go, nope, I can't answer that because it has to be this weird secret.
I've got a show coming back out in, I think it might be May, something like that. Might be sued for that. Don't know.
Yeah.
It's called White Gold, and I filmed it with Joe Thomas and Ed Westwick, and it's going to be on the BBC, and it comes out, I think, May time.
Yeah.
And so we've started doing press for that.
Amazing.
So because I'm out here, I've been doing phone call.
Yeah.
And obviously they go, oh, what are you doing in LA? And I was just honest. I was like, dude, I've got this film, and we're doing this TV show that I've written, and da-da-da. And then I went into more depth about what it was, and I was like, it's really fun, it's really funny.
Yeah.
And then the PR woman who was on the line as well just come in and went, oh, yeah, actually, can you not mention that anymore because there's an embargo on that and you'll be sued by
that. That's horrifying. It's such a weird world, isn't it?
Cause I don't know why there's... Like, it's not... I'm not working for the Ministry of Defence.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's just a TV show that I may or may not make.
And the thing that gets me is now is the time that they should be interviewing you about it because it's new and fresh and exciting and you're buzzed. Whereas when you've spent a year working on it and then another year filming it and then a year after that from there editing it, you're then doing a press run and you're like...
which was basically what I was doing on the telephone. They'll go, and they always go, oh, any funny stories from the set? And I'm like, oh, I can't. It was...
happened ages ago.
It was so long ago.
Yeah.
I remember laughing. I remember there were funny stories. I remember having lots of fun. I can't think of any right now.
I genuinely, when I was doing Taboo, I made notes, because of exactly that. And it's weird because it turned out I wrote this thing that was part of the promotion. But the reason I was writing that was I want to remember any of this and I want to take in the moment in case someone's like, how was it? And because it's such a whirlwind.
Yeah.
Being on set, and I've only been in small roles, but in bigger roles, being on set, you've got constant scenes, constant dialogue, constant script changes. It must be hard to kind of take much of it in.
That's why I never learned the script.
Yeah. Yeah, oh really?
That's my excuse. That's well, I'm going to change it anyway.
Yeah,
I'll do all that work. I always say to myself, I never got into this job to work for a living.
Yeah.
The minute it becomes hard work, I'll go back to fitting kitchens or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that was a laugh.
Yeah.
If this stops being a laugh and starts being difficult work, I'm not going to do it anymore.
Done with it. This was this was all, and again, all of these entertainment industries, they're all avoidance of getting a proper job.
Yeah, that is it. It's just because I didn't want to... I wasn't very good at anything else, and I found it boring. It was a little bit boring. That's so, what work is.
So what was, let's go all the way back, what was your route into acting and whatnot? I was going through, and obviously we'll talk a load about In Between This, because that was just a game changer for you and for comedy, I think, at the time. But brilliantly, you had... I'm sure it was three different credits in the bill, which is the every British actor has to have been. I've been passed over in that. I don't know why, but they all have to have been in the bill. And I was excited that you had three different characters.
Three different characters, three different years. They sort of brought me back every year to play a different person. And they were insane. All the storylines were insane. One of them was...
Did that hurt that they felt you were so unimpactful the previous year that people wouldn't realise that? That's the same... That's a recurring character. No, it's not. It's a different character. Oh.
Never thought about it like that until you just mentioned it. I made so little impression.
Yeah.
That they were like, oh, he's quite good, this guy. Yeah, get him in to do the part. And then a year later, it's like, who's that guy? I've never heard of him. Yeah,
this guy looks good. Let's put him in. You know this is my third... All right.
But they show repeats of the bill on TV, and whenever a repeat of the bill goes on, everyone takes a picture of their television and tweets me it.
Brilliant.
And I like, the one thing, I ignore them.
Yeah.
I make a point of ignoring them.
Of course
them.
You do.
But the one thing that I just want to say to them is going, who the fuck is watching repeats of the bill from 10 years ago?
And my problem would be, was the bill was... continuing sequential storylines. So are you watching it every day to keep... Because if you're just tuning into one episode, you're not going to know what's going on. Who's genuinely living their life 10, 20 years backward or back, if you know what I mean? They're like, all right, I just see it last week. And by last week, I mean 1992.
I know. Of all the things to rewatch. Like, it's so...
I like it.
It's nothing. The bill's nothing. It was just a space in the television. when the time it was made, it was like, it will fill that gap.
Have you seen the size of Reg Hollis's beard now?
No.
So the guy who played Reg, he's got a massive beard and looks crazy and mental, and it's a big look.
I'll check it out. I've got a beard. What do you think of my beard?
I like it.
I've had a couple of beard cuts.
Yeah.
I've never had them before I got out here. And every 2 weeks,
it's nice to be tidied up and trimmed.
It is, yeah.
I struggle. I never know if I should have trimming of the upper line of the beard because you've got some there.
Yeah,
but again,
mine just goes.
I don't
up
normally.
To my eyeballs.
And this guy who did it recently trimmed it just as we were chatting, and it's fine because it's only a little bit that he's trimmed. But still, I was like,
it makes a difference.
Yeah,
it makes it look intentional.
Yeah.
Rather than just can't be bothered to
And
shave.
I could never decide if I want it to look intentional or I want it to look like I just can't be bothered to shave. Have you... this is the stupidest question you'll ever get asked. Have you grown a beard for any reason? Because genuinely, often, if you've got huge in a TV show for a particular character, you might want to try to not be that character. You might not want to be Jay from The Inbetweeners walking into every meeting.
I don't think that way.
No.
I get people all the time saying, oh, but you're sick of, you know, people wanting to talk about The Inbetweeners.
Yeah.
No, not at all.
Brilliant.
Like, I loved doing it.
Yeah.
People love it. People still want to talk about it. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to go all Kurt Cobain sort of see The Inbetweeners as my Nevermind. Yeah. Even if I was Kurt Cobain, I'd look back at Nevermind and go, that was fucking good, wasn't
it? Good. That was a right laugh.
Like a really good record. And,
No, that's a great way to be in it. Perfect outlook now.
And also, because so much of that show relied on people watching it.
Yeah.
And also my life basically is the way it is now because people went out and bought a load of DVDs and a load of cinema tickets.
Yeah.
And now, you know, I don't have to do anything again for the rest of my life. I don't want to, which is great. And, you know, sort of dangerous as well for someone like me because I might just say I don't want to do anything now.
It's sometimes tough to not have that boat hovering over the arse
I am joking. I always thought that about myself, but I do think I can't help myself and that I like... I'm never doing nothing.
Yeah.
Which I think you're very much the same.
Yeah, but it's something that comes to mind.
You don't realise you're doing something. You're just doing something all the time.
It's something that comes to mind for me, though, because of... I still plan at some point to do another record, but because there's no boot hovering over my ass making me do it, and because everything else is going well, I'm not getting around to it. And that's, again, it'd be different if I was sitting around watching TV all day and not doing anything. But still, there is that thing that makes me think, well, maybe the fact that I used to have a label who were like, oh, we need a new album, that's why I completed
records. No, I don't know. I think it's slightly different. I think you just become... You just... Your interests shift and shift back.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
Like, I started a YouTube channel recently because I wanted to learn more about creating content and even just the technical side of that.
That's wicked.
The equipment that goes to it, the lighting, the cameras, the editing, putting music on it, things like that. I just wanted to learn more about the industry that I'm in.
Yeah.
And it's just become a really sort of fun hobby.
Yeah, that's great.
But it's just... I'm always coming up with stuff like that. I say they're a hobby, but they're things that lead to stuff.
Completely. And it's a beautiful thing when... And it's what more and more people are exposing and doing now because of the internet and because of all this, that if you're in a position where you've got some kind of public profile, you can do those interesting things and they become a thing. Yeah. If that makes sense, they become something. And whether it be gaming or as I said, learning about the industry... As soon as you express that to a number of people, it can then start to build and build and become a valid part of your work.
But that's the thing. On the YouTube channel, I always make a point. I always say at the end of every episode, I say that if you leave a comment, I will read it.
Yeah.
And I always make sure I read every single comment. And
YouTube, that's dangerous because YouTube...
No, not for me.
Really?
Not at all. Super supportive. Sometimes really funny.
Yeah.
If I'm ever criticised, it's coming from a sort of like, oh, that didn't quite work. You should use this, or you should buy this, and this will help you with that. And I go, oh, brilliant, thank you.
Yeah, that's helpful.
Like it's been a really amazing experience. And then obviously a load of them are just in between us quotes.
Yeah.
Which is why, and again, when people say, you know, do you not get fed up with the in between us quotes? And I'm like, look. All those cinema tickets, all those DVDs that people bought, if they see me in the street, the least I can do is talk to them about The Inbetweeners for 5 minutes.
Completely. So how was that experience of The Inbetweeners? Because it was one of those rare... And it's going to sound strange to compare it to Game of Thrones, but it's one of those...
No, it was very similar,
It's one of those shows where, at the start of it, it didn't have a big name and big star. It chose its cast... Not unknown, not inexperienced, but not big big household names, and a lot of series are always
unknown and inexperienced.
That was
sort of what they were going for.
But that's what's kind of it. Then meant that you went from. I mean, what was the expectation at the time? We've got this huge show, or was all right, I've got another gig.
We joked all the way through it, going, "No one's going to watch this."
Yeah,
we thought it was funny, but we all thought we had a bit of a weird sense of humour.
Yeah,
and some people watched it, and then they told other people to watch it.
Yeah,
and then it became a thing. But we weren't. We never saw it becoming a thing at all. Like my track record up until that point was every pilot I'd ever been in. Never got made into a full series. If I got into a series for something, then it never got a second series.
Right.
And then even as far as the point where I was in, I can't remember what series it was. I was in the last series of Teachers.
Right.
And that was like a big show, well-established.
Successful show.
Yeah. Again, the series I was in just... That was it. Killed it off.
Just killed it off.
So I was I need to get a job that will last a little bit
more
longer
than a series.
One series, yeah. And I did not think The Inbetweeners was going
to
be it.
Yeah. But it just clicked and it seemed to... I mean, I don't think it's exaggerating. Oh, when I say it was a massive game changer in TV comedy. In a similar way, if you look along, you look at Partridge and The Office, and there are all these shows that... come out, and number one, there's nothing else like them. And number two, they spawn constant, a lot of reference and quoting, but not catchphrases. Do you know what I mean? I don't feel there was anything particularly written there as, oh, here's the catchphrase, but there was a lot that became iconic little quotes.
Yeah, I don't think there was anything. I think there was maybe words that were said more than once, but that was just because we were speaking the language of young men in Britain. You can't.
Yeah.
A word isn't a catchphrase, is
no,
it?
Just no, it one can't word. Be. It's just a word.
Yeah. Like bus wankers, I think that's said twice in one episode, but that's just that. The idea of that was to lead up to a joke.
Yeah, yeah.
We didn't think it was going to be a thing.
And that got massive. Again, it became part of society and of our culture. It became a valid reference.
Yeah. But we're very much consequences of Partridge and The Office in particular.
Yeah.
I do feel the one thing that I'm proud about The Inbetweeners is that I do feel that you can tell that we're influenced by those people.
Yeah.
And whereas I think I don't understand why there aren't more shows like Partridge or like The Office. I thought they would have influenced a bit more. Obviously, The Office then started the whole, didn't start it, but it brought the whole mockumentary thing into the mainframe.
Yeah.
The mainframe? Never said that before.
I like it. It's like use it more Trump. Often. It's going to be your new catchphrase.
into the consciousness, the public consciousness. But
it's
no one else I knew was that
sleeve,
was that mad on, especially Partridge. Like, Steve Coogan's my ultimate hero.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know I've got friends that have watched Alan Partridge and stuff, but I'm always thinking about it.
Completely.
It's like my screensaver in my head.
Yeah.
And, I don't know why no one else is like that.
Yeah, no, it's weird. Again, I've got a circle of friends who, it's constant Partridge quotes and constant Partridge reference, but that's something that The Inbetweeners built in their fan base as well.
Yeah.
It became an entrenched part of society. It's actually, you're a football fan, right?
Yeah.
Did you see the Jamie Vardy? Oh, no, just the Jamie Vardy thing where... I think their keeper. Their keeper's Kasper Schmeichel,
who's
Danish, and the opposition
friend. Yeah, I did see that.
Again,
I thought it was brilliant.
It's just amazing.
It was
hilarious. That's just on a football show, and
you do sort of catch yourself.
Danish friends.
You do. Was you on Soccer AM that day when it was on?
Yeah, I might. Yeah, I think I was on that day. Yeah, that's
because I was watching it.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah,
and who was the guy you were on with?
Stephen Graham.
Stephen Graham.
Yeah,
he's a bit good, isn't he?
He's great. He proper took me under his wing in Taboo, and we became...
That's the thing as well.
Taboo friends.
I know. I've got to say, just pissed off that you were doing all that.
It's annoying, isn't it?
This
acting lark's easy.
I watched it all as well. I was here when it was on.
Yeah,
So I bought it on iTunes, and as soon as soon as it finished back home, it was then available on my iTunes account. So I got to watch it.
Yeah.
I just thought it was brilliant.
Yeah.
I just thought it was so beautiful, so ambitious.
Unusual so for the BBC, much, the boldness of the BBC yeah, to put that out.
So
there.
Much money being spent on the screen.
Yeah.
You know, and then there was these reports that, oh, Tom Hardy's lost, his company's lost 2 million.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was thinking,
I read that.
Maybe he's a guy that
wants to create something
rather than make money.
Yeah.
Maybe he didn't lose that 2 million. Maybe he spent that 2 million trying to make this fucking brilliant TV show.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't be admonishing someone for behaving like
completely.
That.
Completely. And it's an interesting one because Taboo still, comparatively speaking, is a cheaper TV show of that kind. It costs way less than your Game of Thrones or these big productions.
It still would have cost a lot though, because anything that's period straight away is that's budget. But also the way that it looked, in that it was the first time I think that I've ever seen something that probably represented how things actually were.
Yeah, yeah.
Whenever I think of the Prince Regent and people like that, I think of Blackadder, obviously,
first of all.
But everyone's sort of very sort of white pressed shirts and all this. But when you actually think about it, no one washed and no one cared about hygiene, and none of their shirts would be white. Even the parts of the aristocracy, they would have all looked filthy and spotty and grotty.
Completely.
And that's what it looked like. And I just thought that whole thing was so much fun.
It's an odd one because I feel comfortable raving about it, because in reality, I was a tiny cog in that, so I can be excited
you
about it. But the thing that got me was the fact that it, and it was in as soon as I got the scripts through. I think in the first episode, it addressed the fact that they're going to be addressing slavery, which again is never touched upon in any period drama. Everything is so fine and refined, but that all comes from,
especially not in Britain as well,
from black people's blood, essentially.
Like over here. You know, it's race and your ancestry and your history is very much in the forefront of people's minds, because everyone here, unless they're Native American, is from somewhere else.
Yeah.
And they all make a point of learning where they're from and learning about their history.
Yeah.
And, you know, black people here don't have to go that far.
Yeah.
And they're ancestors of slaves that were brought to this country, so they have that in them.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas back home, skirted around that in school, never really touched on that.
Yeah,
and also the fact that Britain did have a really big hand in that sort of thing,
hugely. Yeah,
and it's sort of one of the things that's been great that I've been spending so much time here in the last few years is that different cultures are really. Is a really good thing here. It's embraced.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, in LA, I guess. I'm not sure about the rest of the country. But I remember I was doing a film with a guy called Edgar Blackman, and he is black, and his name's Edgar Blackman. Which,
brilliant.
Which was obviously brilliant.
Very descriptive.
Yeah, it was great.
It's like Princess Di.
And
she died.
And, yeah. And all this, so things that had been happening at the time was that, like, I'd gone to see a load of comedy shows, and a lot of the material was about, look, we're different race.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, I'm a bit bored of that.
Yeah.
But that was sort of what people wanted to make jokes about.
Yeah.
But then also a lot of the material would be like, it'd be a white woman,
mm-hmm.
and she'd be on the stage, and she'd be adopting this persona of like a sort of sassy black woman.
Yeah.
Like, it was really bizarre.
Yeah.
And she'd be going like, I don't need a man. I pay my bills and all this. But then on the other side, just a load of black people were getting shot by the police every week.
Yeah.
So I was just sitting there thinking, right, do we love black people in this country?
Yeah.
Or do we hate them?
Yeah.
I'll go with either one. Just tell me what to do.
just
you know, I bow to pressure and, you know, and I look at the police and I think, well, you know, always do what the police say. And and if they're shooting black people, well, then I assume by their lead that it's okay to be racist.
Is that the rule now?
But no, when I was, all these jokes and thoughts were going through my head, and one day I just went to Edgar. I went, what's it like to be black, Edgar?
Yeah.
And he went, you just, what? Did you just ask me what it's like to be black?
Yeah.
And I went, yeah, I've got no idea. Yeah. It seems I'm confused being here and I'm not even black.
Yeah.
And he went, look, it's really great because you've got the history and you've got the food, mm-hmm. you've got the music.
Yeah.
Everything else is really bad.
Yeah.
And I went, oh, okay.
It's an intense a mix. Have you seen Get Out yet?
No.
I watched it yesterday and it's a horror bit comedy, but a horror thing. And it covers so much of those areas just right. amazingly. And if I say too much, it gives loads sure. away, but it's so beautifully done. And I landed on Sunday. It's now Tuesday, and I've already been to the cinema and watched a film. So that's how exciting I am and social. I went on my own to watch Get Out in the daytime.
I went to the cinema on my own the first time ever while I was here.
Yeah.
It was when the last Jurassic Park film came out.
Amazing.
And I went out the opening weekend.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
Because obviously it was packed.
Yeah.
It wasn't intense. Like an empty... And yeah. I went in the afternoon and I was like, oh, everyone will go in the evening. So it was packed.
I had like 20 people in the screen and no. It was a big screen. It was great.
There was one seat next to a little Mexican family and I went and sat down right next to the kid.
Turn around and said, what's it like being Mexican?
Yeah.
Let's get into that.
This used to be Mexico, didn't it? Let's talk about that for a little while.
The trailers are on. Let's have that discussion. Was the In-Betweeners, did it get big in the US?
No.
Did it have a big impact? Was it
not? No. It's got, there's a group of diehard fans and we've got some little In-Betweeners spies that sort of infiltrate and get people into the In-Betweeners.
Brilliant.
People like Brian Quinn, Q from Impractical Jokers.
Yep.
He's a big fan of the show. And
Impractical Jokers is great as
yeah.
well.
Yeah, they're brilliant. I love it. And he got a load of people into the In-Betweeners. But we actually released the first film out here.
Yeah.
And it was like Spinal Tap.
Oh, really?
It was just four British guys.
Yeah.
No one knew. No one cared about trying to sell them something.
Yeah.
But it was so funny because we were given what's called an art house run.
Right.
Which is like what, you know, something like... Chef by Jean, mm-hmm. John Favreau or yeah, something yeah. like that. Maybe, I think that did just go to a full screening, but something like that. It's a little bit quirky.
Yeah, yeah.
A little bit sort of not middle of the road, a little bit different.
Yeah.
Independent. They'd be given like a limited run over a weekend.
Yeah.
And if it performs well, we'll show it on more screens.
Yeah.
I think Big Fat Greek Wedding, that was the format that we were trying to follow.
Right. So they had a limited yeah. run and word of mouth
yeah.
blew it up.
And but then, we had an even and, limited run. It
yeah.
was an art house run.
Yeah.
So it was like, well, who are we trying to advertise this film for?
Yeah.
For people that are into sort of art films.
That's
and
what's
real
kind of
sort
beautiful
of niche,
about it is.
But really what you're watching is just four boys throwing up and shitting on each other.
Yeah, yeah. That's the
like it's not going to appeal.
In an art house run, they'll be like, it's British cinema.
It was like foreign film, oh, yeah.
What's...
It was foreign film, but it was heavily influenced by American Pie, basically.
Yeah. I was going to say, it's weird because it's something that should work because of the whole Judd Apatow
impact
over here and all things like this.
They already do it brilliantly.
Yeah,
like American Pie, the first American Pie film, Superbad, stuff like that was very much in our heads when we started The In-Betweeners. That
yeah.
sort of... stupid young guys together talking in a certain way,
yeah.
Behaving in a certain way that isn't really acceptable, but also at the heart of it, there is, you know, they get you in the feels every now and then and they sort of do something nice occasionally.
Yeah.
And that's what we were trying to do. So to then come to America and go, I don't know, it's like when the Koreans make a car. You ever see those episodes on Top Gear where they've got a car yeah. that's exactly like a sort yeah. of Range Rover or something?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's sort of a bit
replica.
Like that.
I love it. So how was it as the character of Jay grew and grew and grew. Because you're not particularly Jay-like. You're not particularly loud and ostentatious or anything. But he's a great, an iconic character because everyone knows someone that or went to school with someone that's a bullshitter, that makes up stories and exaggerates and all that. So
it was obviously really fun to play a character like that. I thought Jay was just really funny.
Yeah.
Obviously, like, I can't believe I still have to say this. I don't think it's appropriate to behave like that in real life.
Yeah, yeah.
And, but also, people don't go, when people meet me, they don't go, oh, you're nothing like Jay, are you? Like, in a positive way.
Yeah.
They go, oh, you're nothing like Jay, are you? And they'll go, well, no, what do you want? Just masturbate on you or something.
Or again, Stuart Whiffin would tell me of this, because he runs my club night with me as well,
yeah.
and you used to DJ with me, take you out on DJ gigs.
Yeah, that's really funny.
It was awkward, because you'd play a lot of unions, and obviously there's going to be a load of drunk young men who want Jay.
Yeah.
And you're not Jay. You're there, you're enjoying playing some good songs, you're a big fan of music, you love your songs, and they want drunk Jay to jump on the decks and get his cock out.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, it was sort of...
How was that? How was the balance?
It's just, you have to
particularly in that situation, because they're drunk.
Yes.
And
well, no, there's been loads of times where just... There was this one time where I was outside King's Cross Station, just living my life. And a load of sort of like drunk rugby guys was like, oh, there's Jay! And just lifted me up, was jumping me around like a sort of... Like a football sort of chant. And then they went, oh, is this your bit of clunge? And I went, well, yeah, that's my wife. And it's like... and she, it's just... It is funny. Like, but it is
she
funny.
She loved that. I was like, oh, no, yeah, she, okay, thanks.
She finds it funny, but it is just sort of like I'm... Yeah, I see their soul. I see something die in their eyes. They start talking to me. I go, oh, Jay, oh, what are you up to? What are you up to? And I go, well, I'm just... Oh, I've just got back from taking the kids to the school and now I need to pick up some dry cleaning. And they go, oh. And you just see them switch off. And you think, oh, that's another person I've crushed.
It's weird because they, when you watch a series, and particularly at that time when it wasn't as much of your box sets and binging, you're watching each week, you're spending some time with that person and that character, and you get to know, or you feel you get to know and build a connection with that character. So,
yeah,
it's logical that they have that, but then it is that weird thing of like, you know, it's a show.
No,
you know it's not real.
There's people that I've met that I've watched their work so much and stuff, and then obviously you do eventually meet those people when you work in the industry, and I talk to them like I've known them forever.
Yeah,
and then you have to go, oh, no, actually, not. I don't actually know you, do I?
It's so weird, isn't it?
But
podcasting's a weird one as well. There's people whose podcasts I listen to constantly.
Yeah.
I've been on their... I'll go on their podcast or something, and I'll have to keep reminding myself, at points, I need to rein it in, potentially. Because I might, like... we've chatted, we'll have certain digs or certain jokes or certain... We'll cross
I went
certain
straight
lines,
for the stutter quite, which, yeah, like again, quite early.
Which is
forgot that this is the first time. But anyway, pleased to meet you.
which is comfortably acceptable, but you have to... I've had that on podcasts like before where I'll start having or having a dig and they'll be like, oh shit, I've never met this person.
I've done
I feel
it.
Like I know them well because I've listened to them every week.
With podcasting especially and also YouTubers, like they will talk about their life quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so... I was recently doing a video with a guy called Daz Black,
mm-hmm.
and he's got a channel called Daz Games, which is really, really good. He's a really, really funny guy, and I'm sure he's going to be... It's only a matter of time till TV starts knocking on his door.
Yeah.
Whether that's an aspiration of his, I don't know, but he should definitely be on television. And I've watched all his videos, and I think he's brilliant. And then I went to his house to do a video with him, a collab.
Excellent.
They call it in the biz.
Classic.
And
it's good because that's quicker to say than collaboration.
No, I can't spend all my life saying collaboration.
No, exactly. There's not enough hours in the day.
And then he was telling a story, and I was about to join in with his story, and it was about his dog.
Yeah.
And I was about to say something like, "Oh yeah," because they say boxer dogs are quite like that. He hadn't told me he had a boxer dog. And so, I had to stop myself and go, but I'd already started the sentence and I went, oh no, this is going to,
And I
had to just go, I obviously I know you've got a box of dogs. Yeah. I've seen you talking about your dog and stuff.
I've not been outside your house like watching you. It's just.
Another time that happened was here. The other boys were here from the Inbetweeners and we had dinner with Stephen Merchant.
Amazing.
And he was telling an anecdote and I was just like, well, I've heard this on the podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
Like a load of times. I'll finish it for you if you want.
I had one of my most awkward moments ever with Steve Merchant and it wasn't his fault at all. It was completely the fault of a promoter. But I'd been on his Six Music show.
Yeah.
I adored it because I felt like I was on the podcast. Again, I'd listened to the Gervais and Pilgrim podcast. And I was like, so I was on his show and he had his other guy who was his assistant. And there was tons of banter and back and forth. And I was meant to be on for one segment and I stayed on for like two or three. And I was like, oh, we're best mates. This is amazing.
He's rock and roll, isn't he, Steve Merchant?
And then, and then I went to see one of his early stand-ups and he had, it's the first time I saw Brian Gittins actually, who I'd never seen before and I fucking adore him. But, so I watched the show, it was good, I'm about to leave, and the promoter came up and went, do you want to come back to the stage and say hello to Steve? And I was like, oh, it's all right. He's like, no, just come back. So I'd been invited and kind of pushed into it. And I got backstage and there was Steve and Chris Addison and Gittins. And they were obviously having a bit of a chat and they'd all just performed. And I just kind of was thrust in front of them. I was like, all right, guys. And they were like, you all right? I was like, oh, that was great. Was
different great. Energy.
And they were like, oh, all right, cheers, thank you. I was just like, fuck, man, I didn't request this.
No,
I was encouraged.
You should have said that.
It's not on them either. It's not on them because I've had gigs where you're there with the people you're touring with and whatever, and you're having this breakdown of the show, and then if someone else is trusting, it is weird, it is awkward, it's an alien of false. But
should have just said it. I'm sure, like in that environment with comedians,
that guy told me to come here.
Just say he said that you guys wanted me to come here. I now understand that that's not true. Can I just?
I wish I'd been quick enough. I'm sorry. I'm going to go. I want to apologise.
I always get asked whenever I try and go and see Jimmy Carr a lot because he's my favourite stand-up.
Yeah.
And I always get, he's really, really nice, and I always get a note saying, oh, Jimmy wants to see you afterwards.
Yeah.
And it's usually, like last time I asked him, because I always ask him for tickets as well.
Yeah.
Because he plays at Grays. Like he always does a warm-up at Grays.
There, yeah.
So I always go, oh, you, or the Cliffs Pavilion and stuff like that. And so I'm not going to see him if I have to travel.
Yeah.
He's not that good. Fan. Yeah.
He's my favourite comedian. But I'm not that into comedians. He's my favourite of four comedians.
He's my favourite comedian, but I hate comedy. Yeah. But
he's my favourite local comedian that passes locally.
He sent me a message saying, your tickets are under Mr. Rapist Dick Munch. And I went, oh, very funny. Now, is it under... What is it, under James or Buckley? And then he never texts me back. And then I went to the box office and went, have you got some tickets, some comps for James or for Buckley? And I went, no. And then I got my phone out and I read this whole list of just profanities that he said that this is what... And they started laughing and went, yeah, no, here you go, here's your tickets.
Such a dickhead, I love it. Have you ever done any... stand-up or be tempted in that area?
No, I might
weird.
Do some
the world
here.
Of comedy is weird. In that if you're a stand-up, they ask if you can act. If you're an actor in comedy, they ask if you can stand-up or write. Or...
I wouldn't do it back home because I'm sort of semi-famous and it would... I wouldn't like to... One, I don't think I'd be very, very good at it. So I wouldn't want to make people come to a stand-up of mine because I used to be in a TV show that they really liked.
Yeah.
I don't think that's fair.
Yeah. You're paid to come.
Unless I was really good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like,
but I'm not. So
again, if you're starting off and learning, it's better to learn.
But I might do some out here when nobody knows who I am and I can just be like, I feel like I could just talk like this and people would laugh.
Yeah.
And I'd just be like.
Well, LA is the perfect spot for it because I think there's so many good comedy places. So yeah. There's such a good scene. There's such a.
I've got a feeling that people would go like, oh, yeah, he comes on stage and he plays this character of this weird little awkward English guy. And I can just sort of go, yeah, it's all the left to that.
That's what I was doing, classic character work.
No, if anyone knows my work, I am like a one-trick pony. That's all, like... I'm not a proper actor.
It's a cracking trick.
I never consider myself a proper actor, because whenever you hear, like, of what... Take Johnny Depp, for example, when he's coming up with the character of Jack Sparrow, and he has that weird walk and strange accent and mannerisms and things like that.
I mean, to be fair, he's stuck with that for a while now, hasn't he?
He's done well at that.
Yeah.
But, you know, when I look at a script, I just go, oh, how would I say that?
Yeah.
I never sort of think any more into it than that.
That's brilliant.
I never go, just what would the character say?
Say them out loud.
Yeah.
That's job done. I'm going to go and have a lie down.
And I rarely remember the words either. So
it's the beauty of TV and film, though, is you get to, you will have to shoot it over and over and over again. So it's kind of, you get to learn it.
You do, yeah, you do. The thing is,
the first few shots are going to be quite far away, so they can't see you.
They will keep doing it until you get it right.
Yeah.
So there's no pressure.
God bless them. God bless them.
Absolutely no pressure.
Well, with that in mind, of not viewing yourself particularly as an actor, more someone who plays yourself or plays roles as you, how scary was it to get the role of Del Boy?
Well, that was...
Young Del Boy.
Yeah, that was really fun because I love Only Fools and Horses.
Yeah.
And I wasn't offered the role. I had to audition for it with everyone else, but I was an actor from sort of East London.
Yeah.
I'm from South London originally. I was born there. And so, you know, the accent worked.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the BBC asked me to audition, and I went for sort of two or three auditions, and the people kept giving my agent notes back from each casting, and they'd be like, the work he's done, like, for the character is brilliant. Like, you can see how much work has gone into it, and we're really, really excited, and John thinks he's brilliant.
Yeah.
John Sullivan.
Yeah.
And I went, not... putting any work into the character, I'm just doing an impression of Del Boy from Only Fools and Horses.
Yeah,
that I've watched.
You know Only Fools and Horses, right? You know Del Boy.
Yeah, like I've got no memory of not never watching Only Fools and Horses.
Yeah. It's just been part of life completely.
Every week,
at
my nan's watching Only Fools and Horses with everyone else.
Probably doing an impression
exactly.
As a kid
then. So it's like, and that's all.
I'm well trained for this.
Yeah. So it's like it's not. Not work, it's just watching a programme a lot.
if someone asked me to come in and audition to play a young Alan Partridge, I wouldn't need to do any research, because again, that's what you've done with your mates for your whole,
existence. I remember I auditioned for... Fuck, what was it called? The fucking thing was it called? You probably have to bleep it, because I'll probably get sued. The sort of...
Oh yeah,
Yeah, we won't be able to mention it. Well, I auditioned for that, and the first audition was a workshop. So I hadn't read a script.
Yeah,
and it was just come in, and there'll be a group of young actors as well and actresses and stuff, and I'll give you a scenario and just act out the scene and improvise and stuff, which I love doing. I always think that's really fun.
Yeah,
and I'd been in the Inbetweeners already, and the Inbetweeners was big by this point, or it just got big, I think.
Yeah,
And then they went, oh, obviously James is brilliant. We want to see him come back in. Here's the script. And I read the script and I was so annoyed with it. I just thought, like, I don't think the script is how it turned out when it was on television. I've never watched it, but...
It's really good.
Right.
I didn't watch it for years and years and years. Yeah. Something about it, I looked at it and thought, that's not for me. That seems too cool and whatever. And then years later, I slung an episode on Netflix or something and it was...
Well, when I'd read this script, I was like, oh, like, because I was a young man from working class Britain. And I don't think that's represented on television.
Right, sure.
It's either sort of, especially in comedy, which is annoying, which is annoying. Like, for, you know, as much as I love Peep Show and all those sort of things, it's always about, like, people that met in university or recently graduated students trying to find their way in the world.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm sick of it.
And
like,
any working class characters will be the butt of the joke.
Yeah, or any working class character will be a black guy
yeah.
on an estate in East London
yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah,
doing true. Drugs and yeah. sucking his teeth in. Yeah. And you just sort of think, well, there are those people, yeah. but why aren't me and my friends represented yeah. on television?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just people that are working class, that aren't on the dole, that yeah. do work for a living yeah. and just work really fucking hard.
Yeah.
Those people aren't on TV. I guess they're not interesting enough.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah. when I was reading this thing, it was all like that. It was like sort of like adulthood or kidulthood or whatever it's called. And like everyone's like talking like that. And like, and I was like, I don't think there are that many people that actually do talk like that. I think there are more yeah. people that talk like me.
Yeah.
Like, or suburban Manchester or Liverpool or Birmingham.
Yeah,
like
completely.
Those people just outside of cities, they yeah. they won't get this, like yeah. they'll probably be bored of this like I am now. And I found it really patronizing, and I was like, this has clearly been written by a 50-year-old man trying to write
right.
what he thinks the youth talk yeah. like yeah, of today yeah. And I went to my agent. I was like, I just don't want to audition for it. I don't want to do yeah. it. And she went, can you just go in, please?
Yeah.
And I got to a point where I was like, it's really difficult for me to turn up to an audition because I'm so snooty. Right. Like I've got any yeah. right to be.
Yeah.
But I am. Like I'm so stubborn. Like I will not ever work again before I take something that I really, really hate. And I will drag my wife and kids down with me.
I think that can be a really good thing.
No, I think it's fucking dangerous.
It's to have that ability to walk away. And it's a weird one. I had to have this conversation with my acting agents, was to say, and again, it's a similar thing. It's not in a snooty way, but it's saying, look, what a lot of people are used to is, as an actor, you need to go from gig to gig to gig because you've got bills to pay and you've got so on and so forth. I pay my bills elsewhere, yeah. so I can be selective in that manner and just work on stuff that I'd see and go, fuck, that'd be yeah. amazing. And there's a lot of stuff for that. It's not a snootiness.
No, no, no.
I was asked in for the latest a Fast and Furious film, and my agent's kind of sent over going, I'm not sure if you'll be interested in a thing like this. And I was like,
yeah,
fucking hell, it's amazing. It's massive.
Exactly.
Ludacris and Vin Diesel and The Rock.
It's not snootiness. It's something like, I don't have massively high standards.
Yeah.
Like, I love a cheesy action film yeah. as well as, you know, 12 Years a Slave or whatever.
Commitment as well, isn't it? To if you're going to go into a film that will be 6 months of your life, or a TV show even more, you've got to be yeah. into it, right?
Yeah, that's
to commit to that.
That's all I
particularly
do.
Particularly when you've got a family as
I
well,
read
you'll be away from and
yeah.
so on and so forth.
I read something and I go, do I like this?
Yeah.
I never ever ask the question, will other people like this?
Yeah.
Because I just don't fucking
yeah.
know.
Yeah.
I haven't got a clue. And I've done stuff that I like that other people don't like. And that's yeah. cool, but that's the only rule that I can have.
Yeah.
But I was going for this again, don't... can't put the thing in, and so I went along because my agent was like, can you please just go? And I was being fussy at the time.
Yeah.
I wasn't hardly turning up to anything,
yeah,
which is, again, like, it's my call. But anyway, it was less hassle to just go to this audition for something I didn't want to do than it was to sort
yeah.
of keep letting people down.
Yeah, sure.
So I read the script once, and then I went into the waiting room, and they went, oh yeah, we'd love to see you now. And as I was walking in, I suddenly thought, fuck, they're going to... Obviously, the first thing they're going to ask me is, so what do you think of the script? Because that's what they do.
Yeah.
Every time you get a script to read,
yeah.
the first thing people say is, what do you think of the script?
Yeah.
Sometimes, usually, I can be diplomatic and I can say, I really liked this character.
Here's what I liked about it. Yeah. Yeah.
And I was thinking, fuck, I haven't got any of that. I couldn't think of anything I liked. And then... this was still going in my head. I sat down, and obviously, in those 2 seconds where I went, fuck, they're going to ask me what I think of the script, someone went, what do you think of the script? Now, the director's there, a couple of the producers, the writer's there, the guy that wrote it,
yeah.
and the casting director. And I went, I thought it was rubbish. I went, yeah, I just thought it was rubbish. And I thought, you know, I said all those things. I said, I don't think this is our kid. Talk, and I don't think this isn't a true reflection of young people in Britain. I think people will be offended by it. I was offended reading it, and it felt like it was written by someone that was very out of touch. And
man, I bet your agents were like,
casting director,
next time just don't go.
The casting director was furious.
Yeah,
like, and But the character I was going for was sort of, was maybe quite surly or something anyway. And I walked out the room and I got a weird vibe, obviously. It was frosty.
Yeah, yeah.
But it wasn't as frosty as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
And I think, I later got a phone call later that day saying they want you to do it.
That's bizarre.
And I think what they must have thought was, do you know what he was doing?
He's in character.
He was in the character. We need fucking mavericks like that.
Yeah.
In the rock and roll maverick renegades like that. That's what we need. And then obviously my agent then had to go back and go, no, he doesn't want it.
Did you not hear him?
He said it was shit. I would have loved to have been there.
It's really interesting because just to give you some follow up on that, essentially, it's interesting that potentially had a lot of impact because the show didn't. It's got a range of accents and a range of styles. It's not just a load of South London ghetto kids going, what's blood? Let's do this.
From clips I've seen about it, it's not that at all whatsoever. Yeah. So either I'm completely misremembering the situation completely, or which I can't, like I just physically can't be.
Yeah.
But I might be. It because it's so different to what I read.
Yeah.
It does make me think, what is, was that that thing?
Yeah.
But it must have been because it was. And also, yeah, did they take on board what I'd
they
said?
Take on board my advice, criticism. Well, just to clarify to Buddy Peace, who masters and edits these, we are going to be bleeping out the title of that show just for you, to save you.
Just in case. Yeah. Just to save everyone. I don't mind being embarrassed, but there'll be other people that will.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, we're getting everyone. Everyone keeps pointing out that I always say, "Well, we're coming up to the hour mark now, so I'll start to wrap things up." That's become my catchphrase now. But that's just a statement of fact. That's not a catchphrase. Can't be a statement of
fact. Also, we can't talk forever and ever.
No, we can't.
There will be a point where we have to maybe eat.
Yeah, exactly.
But sleep.
One of the things I want to talk
about.
That
buzzing, or stop.
Yeah, for anyone who could hang on, let's go quiet and let it pick up for a minute. If you can hear that, there's a constant hum, and I've got an Airbnb in LA, and there's a constant 24-hour hum in my Airbnb. That's how I live my life. So I'm going back to the UK broken. It is a form of torture.
I think it's the Hollywood sign, isn't it, when they switch it on? Because it's right next to us.
Can someone switch that off, please, for God's sake? Yeah, I am actually I've got a tent next to the Hollywood sign.
I've never been there. I spend so much time here. I've never sort of gone to look at the Hollywood sign. I've only walked, I think, isn't the Walk of Fame just there?
Yeah,
just there. Next to us. I'm pointing. You're not going to see that.
Yep.
I've only walked down that twice by accident.
Yeah.
And you sort of go, oh, yeah.
I've walked up it a fair few times.
If you've come here for that.
Here, and it's annoyed me a bit. Number one, I was excited I found Nicolas Cage, because it's Nicolas Cage. But the thing that's annoyed me is I kept thinking, well, this is going to get full up. They're going to run out at some point.
Yeah, I've thought that. But there are people, there are some people there I've never ever heard of.
Yeah.
And their little thing
is probably quite nice because they're probably from years ago and it's respect
that
they're not replaced. But the thing that got me.
But their little picture will be like, usually it's a disc.
Yeah.
Or a microphone.
Yeah.
Or those little camera. Yeah. Like, I think this one was just like, I don't know, a shoe or something like something from
a good lad.
Something from the Monopoly board, a top hat. And I'm just thinking, why are you there?
Old John Nike.
And then also I've learned, you know, that those things aren't as romantic or as incredible as you think. Like, obviously, as an actor, a dream of mine is to have my name on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Yeah, yeah.
I doubt it will happen. But you do, you know, as a young boy, you spend 3 seconds going, oh, wouldn't it be great if I had my name on that? I've now found out that you'll probably get your name on that if you become really famous and then you have a film out that weekend.
Yeah.
And the you know, Sony or Warner Brothers will pay for the thing to be. It's not something you're awarded. There's not Mr. Hollywood that knocks on your door and goes, I'm the mayor of Hollywood and we're giving you a star because we love you so much. It's just to plug your film that's out.
It'd be nice if there was a Mr. Hollywood.
Oh,
though,
God, yeah.
The thing that got me is Mickey Mouse is on there and Bugs Bunny.
They're
and
not it's people.
Like, they're a waste of... That's a waste yeah. of a star. There's a limited... You can only have so many. There is a
it's
limit.
It's like having the Weeping Woman on there.
Yeah, yeah. There's no need. There's
Michelangelo's not... David. Not Michelangelo.
Exactly. Exactly. Why do they... Why does the creation... Yeah, again, it's like having a film on there.
But they're iconic, aren't they?
They are.
You know, you can't get away from those things, especially here. And again, that thing, you can either get fed up with it, and you know, I was joking about it, or you can go with it and really just enjoy your time while you're here. Like every time I'm here, I just go, this is it. This is why they make all those films that I love.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's so fun.
I've fallen in love with LA, and the first few times I disliked it, and it's because of the perception that we have of LA in the UK.
Yeah.
And I came out and I was like, this is fucking grubby.
No.
Grotty and shit. And then I realised it's grubby and grotty and shit, like all the places I love. Like, yeah. I love South London. I love the grotty. I love the grottier shitter places because that's where I feel comfortable. So as soon as I got over LA not being the LA I had in my head, I was like, oh, this is great.
No, also
it's beautifully grotty and shit.
If you go with it and not against it, you'll get so much. So the car I drive while I'm out here. So I whenever I'm out here, I stay in a town sort of for half an hour, 45 minutes outside Hollywood, outside of LA. Mm-hmm. So I drive in and out. So it sort of mimics my situation back home because I live in Essex, and I'm scared to live in London.
Yeah.
I'll pop into London if I need to.
Same.
Right?
It's too much.
And so I thought, right, I need to get a car. And because I was renting cars and I was just being stupid. And I was, the amount of money I spent renting cars, I could have bought 5 cars.
They're really cheap to rent if you're here for a week or so.
Yeah.
Like, you look at that and go, wow, that's nothing.
I was here for a few months at a time.
Yeah.
And it got to a point after 3 years of that, I think I'd spent about $60,000 on renting cars.
Brilliant.
But also, I wouldn't just rent a normal car.
Yeah, of course you wouldn't.
I kept renting a flash one.
Yeah.
One that I wouldn't buy. But anyway, it comes to a point where I needed to buy a car, so I want something American.
Yeah.
I want something I wouldn't get back at home.
Yeah.
And in LA, you see loads of Minis, loads of Fiat 500s.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's because they make sense, because they're little cars to get in and out of the city of.
Yeah.
I bought an F-150 pickup truck.
Brilliant.
2012.
Brilliant.
And it's got an extra long bed and 4-door cab.
I mean, that's hell in LA.
I think it's 18 foot long.
That's amazing. That is amazing. I've rented a convertible Mustang.
Well, that was the thing.
Again,
yeah.
It's LA. It's very thin. I
did the exact same thing.
Brett Goldstein last night as we were going to think, and I hadn't told him.
Who did you pick up?
Brett Goldstein.
Oh, I thought you said Andy Goldstein. I was like, what?
Andy Goldstein. It's LA. I hadn't thought to say anything, and I pulled up top down.
Yeah, no.
So
it's just a
given. Man, get in.
Yeah. No, I did the exact same thing, but I felt like I'd had a little adventure with my Mustang when I rented it, because I rented it for such a long time.
Yeah.
I fell in love with that car, and then as soon as I found out that they were bringing them out in the UK for the first time,
right,
with the steering wheel on the right side, I bought one straight away.
Amazing! I love them.
Honestly, like
it's beautiful. And again, I think I like it. I like driving it. I've always got either a Mustang or a Dodge Charger or something like that.
Yeah,
because you're in Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah, I love a Challenger.
It's LA, a Challenger as well.
Yeah.
They're just these. Nasty. That's
what I would buy next for here is a Dodge Challenger.
Yeah.
But I love my truck. I love my pickup truck so much. It's 2012. I think it cost me £20,000. And inside, it's all leather.
Brilliant.
It's like a luxury vehicle.
Yeah.
It's exactly the same and probably a little bit bigger. It is a little bit bigger than my Range Rover that cost me £80,000.
Amazing.
That I got back home.
Yeah.
And I only bought that because I've got kids.
Yeah.
I didn't want to.
Yeah,
I used to hate people that drove Range Rovers.
Yeah.
I used to think, get now an imagination.
You're one of them.
I know. Yeah, no, I do hate myself. But as soon as you get kids, you go, right, I want the biggest fucking car, because if I do get into a crash, I still want to be a few miles away from it.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was all I was thinking.
It's valid.
But if you come out to America, they've got loads of them for cheap as well. And they're fucking good fun to drive.
And they love trucks out here. They're They're beautiful. I do want to talk about, before we wrap things up, I do want to talk about gaming.
Of course,
That you're massively into your gaming and enjoying it. What are you into, and what's the kind of... Do you have a Twitch and stuff, or do you...
I do have a Twitch, but I don't get to use it that often because it's difficult for me to do live stuff.
Right.
Because I would like to do that more often, but also there are loads of reasons why live doesn't work with me, because I don't know when I can do it. I don't know who else will be available to do it with me.
A Twitch is quite big on scheduling of when you're going to be on and letting people know and stuff like that.
I cannot keep to a schedule when it comes to things like YouTube and making videos about video games. Unfortunately, work comes first.
Yeah, of course it
does. And then the family.
Then family, then gaming.
Then gaming. But I would like to do more of that. But Twitch is difficult. And another reason is that all my videos are so heavily edited.
Right.
Like I film for a few hours and then I'll get 10 minutes out of it.
Really?
Yeah, because I'm just concentrating. It's difficult to talk and play video games at the same time.
And it's such a weird thing. I've never done it. I've watched a bit of Dan Lesak does Twitch. And again, I was talking to him on the phone the other day and we were having a bit of a catch up, and he was talking about it, how it's weird to be big on it or to get big on it. You do have to be really loud and really outrageous and really shocking. And it's like, well,
it's a discipline, and it's totally different to anything that I'm used to. And I'm introvert as well, so I'm not a crazy wacky guy. But the stuff that I do on my channel, I think caters for a slightly more grown up audience. Only slightly.
Yeah.
Obviously, I will be involved in it, and I was the guy that played Joe from the Inbetweeners, so there will be an element of childishness and puerile. But most of the time, it's a 30-year-old man playing video games.
Yeah.
Like, it's not...
It's an alien one to me, because I love gaming when I can. I don't get to play as much anymore, but I play games to lose myself in a game. Again, I'd be shit on Twitch, because, as I said, I'll be concentrating.
There are games that are good for that. So at the moment, I'm doing loads of videos, because of the work schedule, because of travelling, I'm doing loads of videos on Call of Duty Online.
Yeah.
One, because I love playing it.
Yeah.
And two, because especially the online mode, it's like paintball.
Yeah.
You're just dipping in and out of it.
Yeah,
say if you come home from work and you're knackered and you've got like 20 minutes, half an hour, I'll just play some video games. You don't want to like watch a load of cutscenes
and do a mission.
Learn a story and try and remember what you're supposed to be doing. Call of Duty, you can just play it for a little while, then stop it and then come back to it a little bit later.
That's awesome.
They're friendly games to make videos on, and they're fun games to make videos on.
Yeah.
But also because I've been doing it more, and this YouTube thing has been, it's been a progression for me. I've been learning more how to do it. Like the first YouTube video that I put out that's still on my channel, I filmed it on my phone and I was whispering and shaking because I just was nervous, like really, really nervous.
Amazing.
But now I've got so used to the fact that the camera's there that I do like punch myself in the leg and scream and shout when I lose.
Yeah.
And as pathetic as that is, like me playing Call of Duty especially, I don't know what it is about that game, but me playing Call of Duty is like what I'm like when I'm watching football.
Yeah.
I don't know why that's acceptable to, like, me and my dad's exactly the same as well, to shout and scream at a television.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I love that. I mean, from having gone to Millwall since I was a kid, I love that football allows big burly men to act in a way they wouldn't be allowed to act in any situation. And I know people look hooliganism or whatever else, but more just the emotion and the getting up and screaming and being happy when you've scored and all that. It's like, you don't get to show that emotion anywhere else. It's beautiful that there's this thing that just makes it acceptable.
There's a big difference between screaming and shouting when a goal goes in or if someone misses a penalty to just calling someone a cunt.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, I do find that weird. Like, whenever you see, if you're watching TV, especially if you're watching it on TV, like football, and, you know, someone's putting the ball down for a corner.
Yeah.
You will always see someone in the crowd pulling the fingers, saying the wanker sign.
Yeah.
And I always think, Yeah, you've made a real impact on that footballer's life. I bet he's going home tonight going, they called me a wanker.
Bastard.
Yeah.
He's nasty. Well,
yeah, I won't like it if I didn't take any more corners anymore. Then what would happen? It's just like, it's just funny that, like, not kids.
Yeah, grown men.
Men older than me.
Yeah.
Maybe grandfathers.
Yeah.
Wise elder statesmen of our communities. They reduce themselves to going, tosser, and you just like, that's different. But there are obviously, you know, it's involuntary when you're watching football, and that's now moved over to my gaming as well.
Right.
Like, I've taken that with me to when I'm playing computer
You've
games,
got that passion,
and that had been there for a long time. The first few videos that I made on Call of Duty, I did say on my first few videos that I made. When I was just playing computer games and I started to learn how to actually get capture gameplay and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I did put out little feelers. I did sort of warn. I said to people, by the way, I do scream and shout at video games. Like, I love video games, but I'm really, really bad at them. I love playing them.
It's a good combination.
But I'm not good at them.
Yeah.
And, especially if I've been working, and then if I go, all right, I need to do this YouTube video, I do get annoyed. There was a video a couple of weeks ago where I did just punch myself in the leg.
Brilliant.
And I just started laughing. I've gone, punch myself in the leg. There you go.
Brilliant.
Adult punching himself in the leg over a video game.
Over a computer game. Over messing about.
But I love them. Yeah, I love them. I love that escape, and I love that. Also love that there's a huge community now, and there is things like Twitch, and there are YouTube gamers, and it's so great to play games online, and so easy now. Video games for me for a long time were just sitting in my bedroom because I didn't have any friends, but because I probably wasn't good at making friends, because I didn't quite know how to talk to people for some reason. I just thought everyone was different to me, and I to this day I still say things that people will say are inappropriate. Like a friend of mine, I don't know, I was just like, oh, you smell really nice. And he was like, what? That's slightly weird. He was like, that's slightly odd to say that. And I went, well, no, but you, I mean, it's a compliment. And if you like someone and you think something nice about them, you should say it. But I don't have this sort of filter that's acceptable in normal... I would probably say that to a stranger as well. Yeah. Like, I probably would
creep people out. There's a Dimitri Martin joke where he's saying how a nice face isn't a compliment that you can ever give anyone, and it always seems like an attack of some sort.
You've got
a really nice face.
Thing
fuck
is,
you.
Yeah, it's because he's not met me. If somebody said to me, "Oh, you have a really nice face," I go, "Oh, thank you.
Cheers,
that's
mate.
Nice of you, thanks." And I'd go, "What a lovely thing." And that person has made me happier and has a positive impact on my day.
Yeah.
And that's what I think if I do it to other people.
Yeah.
Like, I always say to my kids, if there's something you can do or say that will make someone happy, that won't hurt anyone, you should definitely do
it's
it.
It's such a weird one how we put edits on ourselves because of...
Yeah, like
can
a filter.
It's because of... Sorry, and when I have that all the time in London where I'll see a beautiful young lady on the train or something.
Yeah.
And I'll think, what a beautiful... And I'm not on the pool. I'm not after anyone. And if I didn't have that filter, which I'll impose myself, my urge is to say, excuse me, just want to say, beautiful you are.
Well, I think...
Have a good day. But
that's
intimidating, particularly for a 6-foot bearded guy.
Yeah.
All right, you're pretty.
No, but you wouldn't say it like that. You'd say it the way you said it.
Yeah.
And I think society's wrong for making that a problem. And like, or if you were just going to do it, just before you was going to get off on your stop, just say, look, I don't want to take up any more of your day.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say, I think you're very pretty, and I thought that might, make you smile.
And just
by
to clarify, I noticed that in women and in men. My mates will mock me all the time in UFC when I'm
more
like,
in men.
I notice a lot. I'll always be noticing if someone is particularly bodied up or in particularly good shape. I'll be like, he's looking big. He's looking toned. It's like, I notice these things. It's
last time I went to the football. I took my mate John with me, John O'Brien, and we were sat in the director's box over at Selhurst.
Yeah.
Because I'm a Palace fan.
Yeah,
it's fine.
Yeah, okay. I know that.
And And obviously, they were like, I don't like to say the terms, I guess there's a derogatory connotation to it, but like wags.
Yeah.
And they're usually famously beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
So there was these sort of like beautiful women.
Yeah.
But me and my mate John, I'm not fucking joking, we saw the most handsome man in the world.
Yeah.
And we didn't stop going on about it for hours. And then when we got home, we were both telling my wife about this handsome man. And she's going, yeah, you, yeah, okay.
You see, I love that kind of thing. And again, there shouldn't be anything wrong with that.
No, not at all.
Beauty in the world is a really positive thing.
He can't be overhyped how handsome this bloke was. Yeah. I don't know his name.
Yeah.
He was like a ship in the night.
Brilliant. Beautiful. it's weird because I had a thing years ago. I was in a pub in Southend with my mate Aaron, and I was at the bar and I saw across the bar, honestly, excluding any ex-girlfriends of mine, so I'm being nice, but honestly, sure, the most beautiful girl I've ever seen in my life. Like, it's just generally as similar as you were with that guy.
Yeah.
I wasn't on the pool or anything at that point. I was just like, and
just,
I said to my mate,
objectively, you've just seen someone that's good looking.
And that was it. But the thing that then became awkward was he was like, oh, you know that she's off the TV or she's in this or this actress. So it then became something like, I feel I can't say that now because now I'm talking about, do you know what I mean? I'm talking about an individual of, rather than this ethereal, anonymous passing of beauty. It's like, oh, it's her off the TV. She's well nice.
Yeah, she gets them out.
It's right. Like, I've mentioned it a few times.
She's got them out before in Bad Girls.
Exactly. She's so pretty. But again, there was a beauty in that. And that's stuck with me to this day. That was like that moment of seeing just a complete stranger and thinking, wow, aren't humans amazing?
I don't think there's anything wrong. If there's any message that the podcast should have, it should be, if you see a stranger and if you, like, naturally, like, organically, don't go out of your way.
Yeah.
But if something comes into your head, like a compliment or something, tell them.
Yeah.
It will have such a huge impact on that person.
Yeah.
To be fucking
it's
scared.
It's nice to get a compliment. Yeah, yeah.
They'll be phoning the police.
I mean, that's it. Never approach me.
I think that's...
If you're a stranger, don't come and talk to me.
I think that's more important now than it is ever. Because we can all talk to whoever we want, whenever we want now.
Yeah, yeah.
And as much as I love the YouTube thing, and I was saying to you how supportive everyone is, Twitter can just suck my balls.
Yeah,
I fucking hate it.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just constant criticism.
I love your responses to people on there sometimes, though. When you... it's troubling because I love them, but I can also tell you're genuinely angry or you're genuinely being troubled by or pissed off. Someone's really got to you.
The ones that I respond to are the ones that don't make me angry.
Yeah.
And I'll go, I'll give them a bit of J back.
Yeah.
And they'll love that.
Yeah, of course.
And then I do like a J-style juvenile comeback, usually about their mum.
Yeah.
Which is fine. But it's the ones where they go... Like, my wife was decorating my office for me or something like that. And I think I took a picture and said, oh, is my wife great? She's painting my office for me.
Yeah.
And then somebody criticised the plug sockets. they're just white plug sockets. And I was like, do you know what? That's fucking Twitter. I was like, you've got nothing better to do in your life than to fucking start on me about my plug sockets. But when that... It's not just the plug sockets. When it's every other tweet that I'm reading is directed to me. It's and all I get from looking at Twitter is going, fucking hell, I'm really shit and I'm rubbish.
It's really interesting because
I'm a terrible human being. I must be the worst human being on this planet.
There has been a change because at one point YouTube was known for the comment section. It's just horrible and vile and attacking. But that has now become your Facebook. Like, Facebook is a prime one.
I've not been on Facebook for years and years and years.
Because it's become such a political hotbed as such, there's just people ready to get into wars with you over the slightest opinion attack. Yes. But again, I guess Twitter has gone that way as well because of the anonymity and because of...
Well, it fuels this thing. And if that person that had tweeted me about my plug sockets had maybe been told that he had nice shoes that day by a complete stranger... We would all be in a different world.
Yeah, he wouldn't be going on about.
And also, everyone's so obsessed with their themselves. No, everyone's just so obsessed with themselves and their own opinion. They think that their opinion about my plug socket matters so much they have to tell me.
And that's, it's become, the key. That's the weird thing. That's the thing that gets me on Twitter, and that is exactly that, is your... Everyone in this, anyone who ever hears of me is entitled to not like me or think I'm shit.
Absolutely.
But what they don't have to do is give me a nudge and let me know.
Is that, absolutely. If I'd have sent that picture out and gone, what do you think of these plug sockets? I will accept anyone to answer that. But it's things like just now just hating someone because they have a different opinion to you.
Yeah.
And just, you know... Take, for instance, it was when Ewan McGregor pulled out of doing Good Morning Britain because of Piers Morgan. Right? If I was in that situation, and Piers Morgan has written loads of things that I disagree with and has maybe done some things, well, we can't legally. but anyway, right, you know, but also some other things that I know about Piers Morgan. He's an in-betweeners fan.
Yeah.
And he's actually, he's like... If you read some of his tweets, if you sat there and read them from, and gone, this is a man who has a sense of humour, now read these tweets.
Yeah.
You get a totally different thing on Piers Morgan. But you know, whether you like Piers Morgan or not, that's not the issue.
Yeah, yeah.
But if I was trying to plug a film...
I hate Piers Morgan. I'm going to go... I'll go on record saying that.
That's but again, fine. But again, if I was to plug a film, I wouldn't go... Well, he thinks things different to me.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do my job today. And I would just go, oh, isn't it good how we think different things? I don't agree with what you think. You don't agree with what I think. But let's not turn it into a fucking, that's it. That's the be all and end all.
100%.
Like, all our society now is all being split up in different things because people have to be one way or the other.
I think it's so much on individual circumstances and situations. And definitely. Even individual, like... I don't believe that everyone who doesn't vote is scum and is wasting a vote. There's some people who don't vote who it is a waste because they're just being lazy. There's some who make an intelligent choice.
I've never voted.
Yeah.
I've never registered to vote.
Yeah.
Because I always feel that I'm sort of the advert for bringing back only certain people can vote.
Yeah. If you've not got the knowledge to join in on the conversation.
Like the poor and stupid weren't allowed to vote back in the olden days.
Yeah.
I'm sort of that.
Yeah.
Don't leave it up to me to pick what we should be doing. But also, I also don't think that there's anything that reflects me or has a voice for me.
We don't have to go into it hugely, but...
I love it.
Brexit's the perfect example of that.
Right. Okay.
If why would a load of people who don't know the ins and outs of it be the people deciding what happens? And I say that without any insult to those who voted to remain or those who voted to leave. But I feel neither side had enough knowledge to make a decision because enough knowledge wasn't presented.
Again, I didn't vote on that because I didn't know enough about the situation.
Yeah.
And I mean, when they said, oh, we've voted for Brexit, like, the sky didn't suddenly turn pink. And, I woke up the next day and it was exactly the fucking same.
Oh, and that's would have been lovely if it had turned pink, wouldn't it?
That's usually what I find with these things, is I go, oh no, David Cameron's got in, oh, boo, boo. Hold on, today is exactly the same as it was yesterday.
Yeah.
And it's just... that's my opinion on politics.
And it's
now.
Fine to have different opinions.
I think that's most people's opinion because nowadays you have to be either right wing or left wing.
Yeah.
And for me, right wing, obviously, I have problems with that.
Yeah.
There are the obvious problems.
Yeah.
And you go as far as to, you know, the Holocaust in some cases.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I'd like to state I don't like.
I'm actively against any Holocaust.
But, you know, for years I always thought, I'd like to consider myself as quite liberal and quite left-wing and quite I'm into letting people live the way that they feel they should live and having the opinions they should have. But now left-wing is fucking insane as well.
Militant.
It's destroying comedy because you're not allowed to make jokes about anything anymore because everyone goes, oh, that's offensive.
Yeah.
And so now I find, where am I? Where am I in any of this? Because none of you have any fucking common sense.
Yeah. The problem is people like... to pick sides. They like to be iPhone or Nokia or whatever else. And it's the same in politics. They like to go, I'm on the left, therefore everything that you say is bullshit and I hate you. It's like, no, there might be some good stuff outside. Yeah. There might be some good stuff
or
this side.
We might just think different things, but we could maybe have a pint and find common grounds on something else.
And my point on Piers Morgan was that pulling out because of the things he said recently, having different opinions politically, things like that, is bullshit because just debate these things. But, what's that word?
Conversely?
Conversely. Whatever, any word.
Is that a word? Balls out of the bath on that one.
I'm pulling out because he tapped a dead girl's phone and is a fucking piece of shit for doing that.
I don't know if we're allowed to say that.
It's fine, it's me saying it. I'll take the heat. Pulling out because of that, I'm fine with that because that's a moral objection to an action that someone's done rather than to someone's opinion or view.
Yeah.
But I said, I was, the human I was, thing, it was... It was
yeah,
it
I was thinking he, more of the political
completely.
Things.
And that was exactly what it was put as at the time. So, again...
But
yeah,
I'd like to think if I was in that situation, that I would find common ground with Paul, Piers Morgan in the fact that he likes the in-betweeners.
Yeah, yeah.
And I like it too.
And as we sit here as a Millwall fan... And a Palace fan, I think we've shown
Ebony
that these barriers
and ivory.
Well, thank you very much for coming and chatting. It was a beautiful note to end it all on.
I don't know if you'd noticed, but I haven't spoken to anyone for about 6 weeks.
No, it's good. I'm delighted to have a chat. Is there anywhere, like where can people say horrible things to you on Twitter?
You can, well, don't worry about my Twitter. If you want to come and say nice things to me.
Tell me about the YouTube channel.
Yeah, type in completed it, mate.
Completed
on YouTube, which I think is one of those catchphrases from The In-Betweeners. And
that's brilliant name.
And it's me, and I make rubbish videos, and it's all very, very low standards. And if you have your bar set very low, you will get something out of it.
Yeah, perfect. Well, thank you very much for coming on and chatting.
Thank you.
Cheers, mate.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Discretion Pieces.
There we go. That was James Buckley. After this, we did a little video for his YouTube channel. So check that out. At the time of recording this, it's not up yet, but I think it should be up by the time you're listening to this. So yeah, that was James Buckley. Next week will either be a drunk cast or Kelly Marcel. And Kelly Marcel is a screenwriter and... as close a friend of mine as anyone as I've ever had on the podcast. So that's exciting. And we got to chat. Like, she's been on my list of people to have on the podcast from the day I started it. And we've gone to two or three times and it's not happened. So I was super pleased to get that one recorded. So yeah, either Drunk Cast or Kelly Marcel next week. Either way, the other one will be the week after that, if that makes sense. Thank you for tuning in. Go and grab Hardcore Listing. The new podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network with Chris and Stu, and I'm on it. Thank you for tuning in, guys. I'll see you soon. Ta-ta.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project... there's a spray paint pattern that's just right, because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1, only from Rust-Oleum.